everyone, I want to welcome you to the new podcast with my friend Rachel Keck and I. I'm Brad Hill. And this podcast is called Take Up Space. What we're hopeful for in this podcast is to give you stories and tools and observations from people who are in the changing landscape of leadership, leading from clarity, authenticity, vulnerability, empathy.
Hello, once again, everyone, for another episode of Take Up Space, the changing landscape of leadership. And I get to have two of my culture first friends on the podcast with Brad and I today. I have Shannon Hughes from Enliven Studios and Gary Ware from Breakthrough Play. And we are going to have fun today. I mean, just the energy when we all came on the Zoom, like Brad said, was so great. So, I'm so excited. Maybe I should stand for this because I'm feeling like that much energy around this conversation.
Take up space, Rachel.
That's right. That is right. Okay. So let's start with a little bit about both of your stories. I mean, we all know each other a bit through the Culture First community, but I'd love to hear, Shannon, if you wouldn't mind going first, just some of what you would feel comfortable about sharing your story and how it's landed you in the work that you're doing now.
Sure. So my name is Shannon Hughes, and I consider myself an experiential facilitator. I use play and applied improv. So the play that I do is really rooted in improv. I think Gary and I have that in common. And my story is that I come from a background of 20 plus years in corporate marketing, corporate advertising. I was actually with one company for a very long time. Great company, treated me really well. And it was fabulous until it wasn't fabulous anymore. And it's funny because I also have a long history of writing and performing and doing improv and studying all that just kind of growing up. So it's a natural transition for me to do this now. I was with a company called a recruitment advertising agency, and I was VP of client strategy, and it was great until I recognized that I had two small kids and I was working 60-hour work weeks and taking calls late at night and early in the morning. So I shifted into a role of financial operations manager. No, thank you. It was great because it afforded me to work from home and do all the things for the family. And then I recognized that it was sucking my soul. It's funny because I signed up for improv classes at Bats Improv in San Francisco and simultaneously got this calling to consider leaving my job and what was that gonna look like. And I did it in 2018. I worked it out with my husband and my family, and I up and left my career, and I didn't have any plan. Yes, and just kind of just went off on my own. And in March 2019, I established Enliven Studios. So I'm still a fairly young organization of, I call myself a tiny team. It's me and a virtual assistant and a creative designer. And things are going really, really well. So I work with small to medium-sized businesses, both in for-profit and nonprofit, and I use play as a way to get people out of their heads and into their bodies for the sake of collaboration and creativity.
What was your favorite thing? So you played as you were as a kid. What was your favorite thing to play as a kid?
I'm an only child, so everything.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
There aren't many of us. Yeah.
Okay, that's very fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned Culture First. Culture Amp had a big conference in 2018, and they gave away these little pins that you could kind of pick a pin that identified you. And I think, and there was an only child pin, and I think I was like one of five people who chose it, and it's sitting in my altar behind me.
Wow.
So I played everything. It was a lot of make-believe, a lot of making shows and creating shows and performing for my parents, my poor parents.
Very interesting. Okay. Gary Ware, San Diego.
Yes. Are you sitting down, everyone? This is going to blow your mind because Shannon and I, our stories are like eerily similar.
So true.
I have background in marketing and advertising. When I first took an improv class, I immediately started seeing the connections between the practice of doing improv and as it related to running teams and improving culture and all that stuff. And I, to be honest, I thought my life's work was going to be in marketing and advertising. And I just kept going up that trajectory. So much so that I ended up leaving an agency job, very cush agency job, where they appreciated everything that I was doing. I was growing a team. And I was using all of these skills that now do as a facilitator. I was just doing it for my team. You know, it was a selfish thing. And then I started my, not by myself, but I had two co-founders. And in, I think it was 2014, we started our own agency. And my job was to lead team development and client experience. And it was great until it wasn't. And get this, in 2018, my business partner came up to me and said, I think we should go our separate ways. And left me sort of scratching my head, like, what just happened? Everything came crumbling down. So this is where our stories are similar, but slightly different.
The timing is exactly the same.
It was in March of 2018.
March of 2018, I left my job and Gary had this situation happen with
him. Yeah, I was sort of forced out. And then our landlord called and told us that we had to move because he was selling the house that we were renting. So I was the breadwinner. My wife was home with our almost one-year-old son. And I was like, what do I do? And so we ended up selling everything and we moved in with my parents for a bit so we can sort of regroup of like what's going on. And then that's where I, instead of just going to get another job, I felt like I was employable. I probably could have gotten another agency job, et cetera. But I felt like this was the perfect opportunity to start to take these things that I was using myself and start to bring that to the world. And so that's where Breakthrough Play went from like a sort of hobby slash blog where I was journaling all the stuff that I was learning to actually putting it out into the world. And so here we are. And similar, I use applied improvisation as a tool for team transformation. And yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's amazing.
And so I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I was just going to say it's so funny because I did the same thing. I created a blog was my very first thing to do. I thought, well, I have all this energy and all these things that I love and I can see the connections of improv and life and business and it's all inside me. I have to put it out somehow. And I wasn't ready yet. I still had all those little crazy voices in my head saying, well, you can't start a bit. What are you? You're crazy. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So I blogged instead and I still do that. But in addition to everything else that's going on. So that there's another similarity, mm-hmm. which is pretty wild.
That's, I think what I love is other people that see connection in things like things that have not normally went together, but they're like, oh yeah, I see how that all fits together. I love it. Yeah. I love it. And I love that March 2018 was like this huge time. March 2018 for me was huge, but I did the opposite. I went from outside to inside. I became an internal employee for the first time for years. I hadn't been internal. So that's fascinating. What I'm curious, what you all are finding, you know, one of the things that Brad and I have talked a lot about just over the last year is burnout and the amount of stress and people just want fun. I mean, they just like intuitively, they know mm-hmm. I've got to have some fun. I've got to play. So what I would love to know what you guys are seeing, just what you're finding around that.
I'm finding that is a very, very true statement. I think that it's tricky because people know that they need it It's something that we inherently do. It's something we're born to do. It's how we learn. It's what, you know, it's how we evolve and grow as human beings. It also has a very clear place in business in terms of it being needed. It's still a little triggering for people, right? It's like, well, what's the return on investment for play? Well, what's the, you know, well, how is play going to revolution, you know, drive my numbers and help me hit my bottom line? And I don't know, Gary, what your thoughts are on this, but I still hear that. And there are the progressive companies, and certainly there's a number of them. And well, on this call, and there are plenty of organizations that see it clearly and invest in it. But it's tricky. I mean, it's still not a smooth road. It's still a little bit of, do we use the word improv? Not now. Nope. Not with this, not with these folks. Do we use the word play? Ooh, maybe not. Maybe we call it something, right? So it's nuanced, and you have to kind of, it's like a little bit of a landmine to figure out who's ready and who's not, and when to push it and when not to push it. I mean, sometimes you just have to push it. And if they're not in, they're not the right people for us. What do you think, Gary? What's your thought?
No, spot on. And it's so interesting because, as Shannon mentioned, we are wired for play. If you think about up until like age 9, everything we did was through play. And, you know, there is a lot of research out there that talks about the benefits of play for kids. And they're starting to have more research saying that this is something that is, you know, should be celebrated and is just as important as breathing, you know, for adults. However, we have that sort of internal critic, you know, whatever it is that is sort of hitting the pause button and not allowing us to activate and utilize our, you know, natural superpowers that come from play. And so I've gone as far as to tell people, all right, look, we need to be play rebels. You know, we need to rebel against the status quo of work because the current way of work is not working. And if we want to be more creative, if we want to be innovative, if we want to connect, all those things that are important for business. However, people are having a hard time realizing that play is the bridge for that. And so we have to rebel. And to Shannon's point, some companies, even though you can spin it and you can say all these other things, it's not right for it. But the companies who embrace it, they are going to be the ones that are like sort of slingshot into the stratosphere. Cheat code for business success, you know, since we're using a lot of play metaphors.
Man, did you just say play is the cheat code for business success? I thought, yes. I heard you say that. Wow, that's great. That's so good. So literally we're doing an immersive experience this weekend called Breakthrough. Our main immersive with the organization, Rachel's the president of, I'm executive director of, it's called Hard Connection. But we're doing an immersive this weekend called Breakthrough One. And one of the exercises that we will do is we talk about self-limiting tapes. We talk about self-limiting tapes about, you know, men, self-limiting tapes about women, self-limiting tapes about, you know, jobs, etc. And then we do, what are some self-limiting tapes you have about play and playfulness? And that's a personal perspective that people jump into. That, I mean, you know, I remember when I went through Breakthrough, I did it. Like, just what are some limiting tapes? The wasted praise, the wasted time, plays, you know, all these things. But it dawns on me, the context that you guys are talking about is like businesses and organizations have self-limiting tapes about play, correct? That's what I hear you saying. What would you say are some of the self-limiting tapes that businesses or business leaders or organizations have about play that you experience?
I think one of the self-limiting tapes is that, you know, it's silly and that it will minimize the persona of being a leader, that that leaders are supposed to look a certain way. They're supposed to, I don't know, it depends on your industry, but they're supposed to have an office and have a suit, and they make the rules and people follow what they do. And you know, the research abounds that, you know, the leaders that people trust are the ones that, quote unquote, come down to their level and play with their employee base, come out of their office and engage at a level that is authentic and fun. And maybe they make a mistake. Oh, gasp, right? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like, I don't trust someone who thinks they're always right or tries to be always right. I mean, making mistakes is so much part of it. We talk about that all the time in our work.
So this is interesting because I think some of the work that we're engaging with, helping leaders and, you know, business folks engage clarity, authenticity, vulnerability, and empathy, where that really gets weight right now with Brené Brown's work and so many others is the data says, if you don't track with this, you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like, you're just wrong. And it's not even, you were talking about ROI earlier, Shannon, but I mean, the data says if you really care about that, then you will do this. And that's kind of the interesting place that I found a lot of leaders to be, is if the data, you know, in the past you could say, okay, well, the data says this is just a waste of time, blah, 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 blah. But now that the data says that this is actually true, but I don't really know how to do it or really, there's just tapes for me as a leader in doing this. Does that make sense? Like, that's where I think it gets to. And I don't know that I'm willing to take the courage to grow in that path. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. And that dissonance is normal and natural. And it reminds me of, I think it was in, was it 1991, the movie Hook with Robin Williams, and how Robin Williams is Peter Pan, you know, spoiler alert, he's Peter Pan, but he's being brought back to Neverland as a grown-up. He doesn't remember that he's Peter Pan. And again, play and all that other stuff is foreign to him. He's all about, like, let's fooling, you know, stop fooling around, let's be serious. But the interesting thing is he's having a hard time learning how to play. And that is the thing that's going to save him and his kids, is him tapping back into his play drive and remembering how to play. And the interesting thing about play is a very vulnerable activity. A mentor of mine, Gwen Gorton, she says, play brings out your true nature. When you are playful, it's going to bring out who you really are. And in a work environment, we've been trained to, like, put up shields. And again, that goes against what Brené Brown talks about in her teaching about vulnerability. And so in order to be playful, you have to bring down those shields, and it's necessary. And this is the thing. Animals, engage in play, and they know it's vulnerable, because when you are engaged in play, you're completely immersed in what you're doing. You're completely present. And yes, that leaves you open to a potential attack. However, in order to reap the benefits, you have to allow yourself to go there.
Yes. Can I add something to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Shannon.
Yes, yes, 1,000 times yes. And it's also reminding me of patterns, right? That we forget that we have brains that can change. Like, for years we thought, nope, the brain you're born with is, you know, that we are wired a certain way and there's no changing. No, now we understand all this research is here for us to understand neuroplasticity and breaking old patterns and establishing new ones. And I mean, raise your hand, or for the listeners, like, I'm sure there's 1,000 people who this will resonate with. How many times have you been to, you know, your weekly meeting every Monday at 9:30 in the morning? And it's just like the last Monday, and it's just like the Monday before that. The problems are different, but the solution is the same meeting. How can we solve new problems in old ways? I mean, we have to shift the paradigm. Why doesn't that meeting include some interactive, or maybe it looks completely different one week to the next, or maybe you empower your employees by allowing them to run the show for the day and include things that are like interactivity and play. This whole idea of trying to, how are we going? There's so much change. Sorry, I get really fired up. There's so much change that needs to happen in our world and in our workplace right now. There's 1,000 things that could go in. How can we solicit change by doing the same thing over and over again? And I think to Gary's point, play sounds really frivolous and silly, but it can be so powerful in terms of driving change and getting people to think outside the box in terms of how we solve our problems.
Yeah, that's so good. One, I wonder from what both of you think. I mean, I've experienced this with Shannon. You're right. Like, play is so vulnerable. And so as soon as that vulnerability starts coming, that's when the critic immediately just squashes that shit down. No. And so I know I've experienced Shannon's work in that, like, how do you both, what are some ways that you deal with those inner critics, knowing that's really what you're dealing with, right? That's a huge barrier that you're dealing with in your work with people.
Do you want to take
this? Gary, you want to start?
Yeah. So this is the secret. If we can just keep going and get into play, the inner critic turns off. And I like to say, there's that inner critic is like a static radio station, WB&E, wrong, bad, never enough. That's just plain. And then, but once you can get deep into play, it turns into station CRW, creative, resourceful. And how, and I know going through Shannon's work, she's the same, is it's by little. You have to like give someone a little bit of play, and they're going to start to get immersed into it. And then you can start to make it a little bit more challenging. And before they know it, they're deep into it. They're having a great time. They're having those breakthroughs. And then they look back and they're like, what just happened? And again, the cool thing is into that vulnerability, you're establishing trust. You are creating something you've never created before, but you have to ease into it. And you can't, especially with people that aren't familiar with this work, you can't go to the deep end and throw them in and like, all right, good luck. You know, it will scare the bejeebus out of them. So you have to start with like something small and then gradually ease into it.
That's, you know what that's reminding me of? So in the seminars that we do, one of the first things I remember from my own experience in the seminar was that you go from A to B. So from one chair to one chair, and you can move to A to B any way you want to move to A to B. And there's music playing and it's great. And it's very early on in the seminars. And I could not, you guys, this is how stuck I was. I could not think of a way to get to A to B that wasn't just like, and then I was beating myself up for not thinking of some, why didn't I just walk? If I couldn't think of any other way, why didn't I just, okay, well, I'm just going to walk. I mean, I can't even, like, now I'm like, are you kidding me? It was that hard to move from A to B for me because it involved doing it in some fun way. It's crazy. Okay, Shannon, what about you? What about you and inner critic?
Yeah, well, I just, hallelujah to what Gary was saying. I mean, there's a real art to designing these types of experiences because I like to think of them as a story arc, right? You have to start with, you know, start slow and then you build. And to Gary's point, it's like, it's so funny to watch that moment where they go, did I just play a game? Did I just do a thing where I connected with somebody? Did that happen? And it's like, yes, it all happened. I have it recorded if you need to see a playback. Like, it really did happen. Yeah. And you know, and I, that idea of, I wrote that down, your static radio, Gary, wrong, bad, never enough. That is amazing. Because it is there all the time. And in fact, it's really interesting to use that concept of the inner critic and the voice that's always going around in our head to build a workshop. I mean, you could do a whole workshop about that, and there's plenty of exercises and games that come to mind that could challenge that voice to actually, you know, for example, pair up with people. And what comes to mind for me, Gary, you know, the game New Choice. Mm-hmm. What comes to mind for me is you could pair people up into a breakout room, and one person could just basically say the things that they're plagued with, right? I'm never enough. I don't, you know, every time I go into a meeting, I don't say anything because I get nervous. And what if everybody says, and then their partner says, snaps her finger and says, new choice. And what that does is it gives the person who's talking a cue to change the narrative. New choice. And while they're talking, they go, I'm not enough. No one's going to listen to me. My boss doesn't care what I have to say. New choice. My boss wants to hear what I have to say because I'm a smart, wicked person who has a lot of power. And then you've changed the narrative. So it comes back to that patterning and changing the narrative to get people to stand up to those inner bullies, because those I always say that my inner bully has a freaking megaphone sometimes, right? Gary, did you have anything to add
to that? Or? You're spot on in that. One thing that I want to point out, and it is two things for that game. And then, Rachel, what you mentioned with the A to B, when you're in play is a simulation. That's how it registers to our brain is, oh, this is just some thing that I'm doing. However, I have this belief, how you do anything is how you do everything. So when you're in the middle of play, you're going to respond how you would normally respond to any situation. The cool thing is we've taken the context out and we put like this imaginary situation. Now, when we do the debrief, when we start talking about how was that for you, what things showed up, now we can start to help you connect the dots. Like for example, Rachel, with your, think of A to B and you couldn't, you froze and couldn't do that. I would, as a facilitator, I would say, all right, where else does that show up for you of, not being able to go to A to B and you're so like sort of stuck in your ways. And because we're in a playful moment, we can new choice and say, what else could we do? And we put yourself into a consultant mode. And then you're just like, oh, I could have done this. I could have done this. And now we can play it back. All right, let's play this back again. Go do that. And then you do it, new choice. And then you're like, wow, that actually felt good. Or no, that didn't feel good. All right. What else could we have done? And then you're, again, playing with it. And your brain, again, doesn't know the difference between dream and reality. So now you're actually working in scenarios that when the stakes are higher, you've already worked them out.
Okay.
So powerful.
This is so good. I know we're all a part of this in some capacity. And I am super stoked because we're actually having our first, live seminar since, in the last 50 years, it feels like. And this coming weekend, but part of, we have this, this really, major moment that we build to that's just, there's so much play intertwined in it. But we have this moment where we tell people this, this phrase, we tell people it's like, it's not about a performance. It's about playing. It's about letting go. It's about having fun. And we tell people that, and we know that the space we're going to provide for them, they're not, that sound. I didn't hear that. It's like, oh, cool play. Cause that was so ingrained in me. I've got to perform. I got to look like I'm playing. Right. Mm-hmm. But there's when you guys were sharing it, I realized there is a confusion in growth. Like there's a moment in that when we really do play, that there's this wonderful confusion that I myself, and I think from you guys, that we all live for. Does this make sense? Like there's this moment like what just happened, and it's beyond analysis. It's way beyond it's beyond information even. And we see people, I get to be a part of, you guys get to be a part of people engaging those moments and stepping into those moments and trusting themselves in ways that maybe they haven't and maybe ever. And then we can talk about what you're talking about, Gary. Then we can engage, okay, what just happened? What was the growth of that? And how does that, does that make sense? Like there's a confusion piece that's such a touch point, I think, that I love. When you're out playing and you see someone, we all know it. Like we have this moment where there's a lot of people in a room, right? And watching, playing along, but watching other folks play. And there's this moment where they see it in someone else and we all know it. Like we all know it happens. You don't have to say it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just empty. You don't have to say it. We all know it. We all see it. We all experience it. And it's all, and for me, it's sacred to be a part of it. Right. But there's an amazing unlock there that I'm listening to you guys. I'm like, I know you guys are part of this and you get this. Can you speak to that? The confusion point of growth where people trust themselves in a moment and they play. And then it's like, man, what just happened?
I'll speak quickly to this. Yeah, I think a lot of that is, there's so much to be said about the presence. And I think Gary alluded to this before, that you drop into this almost, and I hate to use the word mindfulness because it's so overplayed, but it's like you're in the present, you're literally in the present moment when you're playing. There is no time for, and of course the voices are there. I mean, they always are, right? But if it's facilitated the right way and the energy is there and the experience has been architected in a way that you're at a place now where people are connected with one another and ready, then that presence is absolutely, I mean, just the power of it is immeasurable. And what I like to think about there, and we talk about this in improv too, is obviously in improv there's no scripts, right? So it's all unscripted. And you know, it's a practice in that you know, to be in the moment, to be present, not to bring your own narrative, not to bring your own, I'm going to be the grandma. Oh God, I'm not the grandma. Now what? You have to drop all that away. What we talk about in improv and in my work too, and I'm sure you do too, Gary, is this idea of discovery, is this idea of allowing for discovery. And that can only happen when you're in the present moment and when you are connected with your team members or when the energy is there in the room, where the presence is there and the openness to receive and discover for the sake of discovery. And once you get there, that vulnerability sort of comes naturally. I love what you said about confusion and growth. I wrote that down. That's brilliant. All of that starts to kind of happen organically. And that's why people kind of look back and go, did someone just put a spell on me? Like, what just happened, right? Because it's all happening, just it's visceral and it is confusing. And this idea of discovery and the discovery too is really fun, because not only is it happening in the moment, but then you can play that whole idea of discovery into the debrief, which is what Gary was saying. Like, well, what did we discover here? Oh, well, I actually do this with my family too. Oh, well, if that's interesting, let's talk about that. Gary, what do you think?
I agree 110%. I remind a phrase, a mentor of mine, his name is Michael Burnoff. He says, when you're confused, you're about to learn something. And this is the thing with adults. Adults want certainty. Adults want to know everything. And here's the thing. The process, if you think about it, you have to go through the process to get clarity. You have to go through confusion to get clarity. There has to be chaos to have harmony. However, adults are trying to skip over that. With play takes you through that process. And if you allow yourself to be playful, and you know, Shannon mentioned you have an amazing facilitated experience, you can allow someone, you know, that confusion is going to happen. However, like, you bring them back to the present because we're in this game. And then, you know, you go through all of that. And then the cool thing is you can reflect back. Someone can reflect back to you what they saw, or we can, you know, sort of as a group reflect what we saw. And from that, you can get clarity. I remember, you know, facilitating such amazing experiences that someone came out of the game so confused, like, I don't know what just happened. I have no idea. Like, looked like deer in the headlights. And then we have to tell them, turn down your adult and turn back on your kid. And let's go through the process. Let's talk about what just happened. And then, bing, the light bulb goes off and they're like, oh, and they have that moment of clarity. They have that moment where they, like, everything comes together and it's beautiful.
Awesome.
I love that. I love the, when you're confused, you're about to learn something, because one of a recent awareness for me, like, it's probably in the last couple of years, is that those feelings of overwhelm are tied to vulnerability. When it's like, and you're right, and I just want to shut that down, like, because overwhelm can be scary and so big that I just want to shut that down. And then, yeah, that inner critic of like, oh, really, you're going to play your way through this? Like, that's really like, that's the smartest thing to do. Like, and it goes back to that animal instinct that you're talking about, Gary, like, just I'm exposed here. I'm exposed. And so I wonder, because what I hear you saying is it is play and fun and improv and on the fly, and it's intentional and structured and on purpose. And so can you talk about that balance of, I mean, it's not about going out and winging it all. It's about using play intentionally. So you want, Gary, you want to start, talk a little bit about.
So naturally, when I talk about that, I have experience in improvisation, applied improvisation. That's the thing. So we're just going to wing it. And I say with every game, regardless if it's an improv game or whatever, there's structure. Creativity requires structure. There's boundaries. And within those boundaries, that's where we're spontaneous. That's where we're winging it, because we're co-creating something. We're co-creating an experience. And so that's what I like to tell people. But the cool thing about, you know, the experiences that, you know, that we create is it's all intentional. And I lately I've been using this phrase, commit to joy, because a lot of times, you know, we throw around like happiness. We want to be happy. And I feel like, you know, happy, that is nice, but happy is fleeting. Happy is conditional. I got something, it made me happy. And then now I'm mad because this thing that I got is not making me happy anymore. Where joy is something that requires sacrifice. In order to have joy, you have to be intentional. You have to create some sort of moment. Like, for example, a few years ago, I made a commitment to run a half marathon. Never ran more than a 5K, but for some reason, it just popped in my head, like, Gary, you're going to run a half marathon this year. I was scared, to be honest. I was super scared. And the trainings were brutal. They were so brutal, and they required a lot of time and dedication. But this is the thing. So much joy and satisfaction when I completed one of those runs. And in the work of improv, we talk about like duality, how two things can coexist and they're not mutually exclusive. So we can hold joy and frustration at the same time. Joy and grief can both coexist, and there's space for both of them. And that's one of the cool things about play. Play creates joy, but at the same time, there's frustration. At the same time, there's confusion, and that's okay. And it's all correct.
100%. 100%. And I also want to add too, people have and I don't want to go on about improv. It's only literally a slice of what Gary and I do. It just happens to be our background, but people have a misconception about improv that it's just, we just wing it. And it takes a lot of practice. There's actually a lot of structure. I wouldn't call them rules, but there's certainly a long list of tenets that you have to subscribe to, and you have to, it takes practice, and so does this work. So does this work. I can't speak for you, Gary, but I would venture to guess this is true for you too. What's tricky for me to hear sometimes from clients is, oh, well, we'll just do one session. We'll just do one session and our whole organization's going to change, and our meetings are going to be run differently, and everyone's going to trust each other, and leadership is going to be great, and our team's going to engage for impact. No. Especially now. I mean, we're doing things virtually, so the sessions are shorter, because you can't expect people to sit in front of Zoom calls for 3 hours, right, necessarily. It is done. It can be done as if you design it the right way. But the point is, these, just like improv takes practice to live, to understand the tenets and the rules, to practice them, to do them, to embody them, to quiet those voices, to try to make those new patterns and wire our brain a different way. That doesn't happen in a 90-minute Zoom session. And so I just wanted to kind of say that because it's so, you hear that all the time. I hear that too, Gary. It's like, oh, improv, right? You're just going to wing it. It's like, that's not even what improv is, first of all. And secondly, no, these are very highly structured, highly curated. I mean, we go into our clients, we talk about objectives. We talk about what does success look like? What sort of dynamic are we looking to change? What are the problems? And then we, you know, then we brace for impact because in how we design these things, these are not workshops where we're just winging things. Granted, there is some things that happen on the fly. I mean, of course, if the vibe is happening in a way that you didn't expect, you got to shift and pivot. And thankfully, we know the exercises that are needed to do that. But I just wanted to say that too. And another thing to your question, Rachel, that I'm hearing a lot is this need from clients that say, we need, 2020 was a bust. We have so much work to do, so much strategy to build, so much commitment to have from our employee base, but everybody is so disengaged right now, or they're falling into their silos that we can't even get to strategy because the engagement's not there. So, you know, that I'm just hearing time and time again, this idea of silos and like, you know, little mini teams coming together to work with one another, but not for the greater good of the organization. And what better way to get engagement and get people to reconnect in a trusting way than through play? And just my last thing, and then I'll shut up, is commit to joy. Yes, yes, yes. that is completely my mantra. So once again, Gary and I are totally aligned. Okay, I'll stop talking.
And, you know, I was thinking about it just before you guys said it, but this isn't, I am imagining in my mind, you know, leaders I've talked to and I mean, both in the profit and nonprofit world, that this is kind of a one-off. We'll bring, you know, Shannon, you in, or Gary, you in, and we'll just do a one-off because it's a cool time. We'll have a cool time and our employees will love us for today and everybody can point for it for the year, instead of it being a part of the ethos and rhythm of your culture, because I think it attracts people that are going to help you create your organization, your heartbeat, into another level. Does that make sense? Like it attracts people who are going to be a part of some major unlocks for you if you let it. I'm wondering, what are some of the hurdles that you guys experience from leaders in that? Instead of it just being a one-off, or cool, you know, we'll have a fun day, we'll throw a picnic, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? As opposed to I want this to be a part of our ethos, because there are businesses that are doing this, right? And I think they're not just nailing it right now, but they are going to even more exponentially multiplication as we come out of this more and more, because I think people are craving this stuff. I think people see through stuff, and I think they're craving, I think things are getting exposed. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you guys experience from leaders to make this a part of their ethos and their culture?
Yes. The big thing, Brad, is exactly it. This is not a one-off thing. Getting them to understand that. And again, a lot of times you have to experience it to finally get it. Because the old way of thinking was, oh yeah, every quarter we're going to do something and we did this and yay. And, you know, when business was good, business was good. However, we live in an extremely volatile environment where the way that we did things before aren't applicable. And so I hear that all the time. Like, oh, this is going to be a one-time thing. I give them this disclaimer of, all right, from this experience, things are going to come up. We're going to unpack a lot of stuff. There is no way that we're going to fix things in this one session. You're going to have homework to do. And the fact of the matter is, this is true. You can look up the research. If you learn something and you don't do something with it, within 14 days, it will be as if you didn't learn it. So company, you invested, however much you invested in this experience, your team learned something from it. And if you don't carry that on, if you don't take those learnings and make action steps to keep practicing it, it's going to be money wasted. Is that what you want? And of course, like, no. But I tell them, like, hey, let's baby steps. Let's do this. Let's see what happens. And I love ending everything that I do with an artifact that people can take back with them, because it's fun in the moment. Like, yeah, we had fun. And then I tell people, I remind them, all right, we're on the playground right now. We're in the sandbox. This is a little make-believe, but you're going to go back to work. You're going to go back to reality, and things are going to start to show up. Let's make a roadmap right now while we're in this good headspace, while we're feeling good, of what are we going to commit to working on little by little, and then, you know, go from there. And then that's where people start realizing, wow, we have a lot of work to do. And then how can we continue to work on this? And then, yes, that's where the confusion comes in. That's where the overwhelm comes in. And then I say, well, we just played and we had a lot of breakthroughs. Why don't you continue to do that? Like, hello. So that is one of those things, but it does take work and it takes practice.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And I mean, here's the thing. At the end of the day, you know, Gary and I want to go in and have a series with an organization. And then our dream come true is that those people take what we've taught them and bring it into the organization and we walk away. I mean, that our job is done. I mean, maybe there's a check-in or there's, you know, but like, and here's the thing, and one 90-minute virtual session is not going to prepare a leadership team to infuse that into their ethos, as you say, Brad. So it takes time and effort on the front end, and then from our perspective, and then it takes time and effort on the back end in terms of, oh, shouldn't even say back end, but it takes time and effort from the leadership perspective to bring it in there. I had a call, I guess it was the beginning of 2020 with a company who shall not be named, and direction, and we had a scope call. You know, I thought maybe this is going to be a thing. And we started to talk about budget, and this prospective client said, oh, well, for things like this, we usually have like a $30 per head thing. She was equating my work to a cocktail hour. And I thought, oh, so you see this as like a team outing, to Gary's point, where it's one and done. Then they go get hammered at some bar. You know, it's like, no, that's not at all what this is. It's anyway, I was just thinking about that because it still makes me giggle. And I thought, no, I don't think we were meant to work together. So anyway.
That's what I'm thinking about. So I'm working with a group right now, and I think one of their collective values will be adaptability or something along that. I mean, to your point, Gary, like, think evolution is only speeding up. You better be ready to deal with change quickly, and be willing to make mistakes and be willing to have empathy in the moment. Like, there's just this. The adaptability is so important. And I think about how your work, how key your work and putting some of those new practices into play are at activating some of the values that people have and are taking as guardrails to how they want to work together. You know, I mean, anyways, that's what I'm thinking, that we don't think people come up with these values, but then they don't think, what new practices do we need to put into play collectively to support the values? I mean, it's really equipping people, right? Equipping people for this.
Agreed. And changing how we look at things. Mm-hmm. To Shannon's point, you know, these things were called like, oh, team building. We want team building. And yeah. The perception of something like that is, oh, well, this quarter we went and did paintball, or we did an escape room, yeah. And now we're going to do a happy hour. And now we want to do this like sort of play thing. And that's, you know, that's cute. Yeah. But I'm looking to develop your teams. And if you want to be more adaptive, if you want to be more innovative, whatever buzzword, throw in buzzword here that the teams want to cultivate, you know, that's not that requires an investment, that requires time, that requires intention, and the work that goes into that. It, there's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, what a better investment to have you guys in and build some practices around play and vulnerability, and then do your outings. Those outings are going to be a much bigger and bigger bang for your buck when people can get from A to B without being stuck.
Right.
You know, real quick, if I could chime in there, one of my favorite clients, they hire me every quarter right before they have their team offsite as a way to get everyone in the right mindset, you know, for that, so that they can be more receptive to all those things. And yes, that is the way to go, because, you know, yes, play seems cute and stuff like that, but play gets everyone sort of connected. It allows people to start to, it primes them to think differently. And then now when you have, you know, all this material that you need to go through, now you have people that are open to it. You have people that are engaged. People are going to connect on a deeper level. Again, I'm going to say it again. It is the cheat code to like business success.
Yeah.
Good.
Go ahead, Brad.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love that. God, I love that quote. Because I mean, just think, if you're serious about leading well, you'll cultivate play more. I mean, if you as a leader are serious about leading well, you will cultivate play more. And it's actually, I'm thinking, it's like, the data is there. It's not doing this because, oh, cool, that's fun. Like, that makes feel good. Like that's all true. But the data is there. And it's a competitive advantage to create a culture that cultivates and fosters this for the people that you serve as a leader. It just is. And I love it. I love the cheat code, man. That's so good. Like, I love that.
All right. I'm going to lay my favorite new question on both of you. You ready?
Okay.
All right. My favorite new question is, what question have we not asked you that you wish we would have?
Well, yeah, one of the things that for me is, we talked about like the why, you know, why is important, and we talked about some examples, but like what next? You know, what should people do like right now? Because this is something that comes up a lot, is I heard this is exciting. Now what should I do? So that is, I think, the thing that would be a great question to ask. What should someone do if they heard this and they want to take action?
Okay, Gary. What if somebody wants to take action right now? What do they do?
Well, aside from you know, picking up the phone and calling Shannon or myself and said, hey, we need them in here. I used to say, you know, you change your mindset and then you get into act. That, like, it's so challenging. I say, take action to get you to do more action, because play is inherently attractive and fun and sexy and all that other stuff. So what is one thing that you can do either individually or with your team and do in a short period of time and cultivate that mindset? And maybe it's before me, take a moment to check in and, you know, do something, you know, sort of bring people together. Or maybe it's being a little bit spontaneous around that, like, sort of witching hour of 1, 2 p.m. where you can sort of circle the wagons, even virtually, and get people to do something that is going to shake it up and get them thinking creatively. But in a short time period, and being mindful of how you feel before, during, and after. That's going to feel amazing, and it's going to want you to do more. So that's my result. That's my sort of take. What do you got, Jenna?
Yeah, a couple things came to me. One is try and make your meetings memorable rather than just a meeting for the sake of a meeting, right? And it's so easy to do. And like, you know, like you said, Gary, and reach out to one of us or follow us on LinkedIn. I mean, we are always sharing little easy ways to get engagement started right off the bat. How can you reconfigure your meetings? Maybe it's when we're back in person again. Maybe it's having them outside. Maybe it's doing a word at a time story to kick off your session. Maybe it's everyone throws a compliment at another person in the room that they mean it, and they say it in the room just for the sake of it. And the other thing that came to mind is, I often say as a takeaway from some of my workshops, see the offers, see the offers. There are offers everywhere. And again, we talk about this in improv and in play, but it's offers when you're in a, performance can be, you know, an offer is a verbal or a nonverbal cue. It's that somebody has referred to you as Uncle Joey and now I'm Uncle Joey. Those are all offers, but they're everywhere. There's an offer with the woman who's bagging your groceries to tell her that, you know, that her smile is beautiful. There's an offer when you're, you know, waiting on a Zoom call with a stranger to ask a really important question about their background. Those are offers. And so play, as much as it is all the things we've talked about, it's also just authentic engagement for the sake of lifting each other up. And God knows we need that right now.
I'll just say this real quick, Rachel. Look, if you're listening to this and you're a business leader or organization, you're looking to get competitive advantage and actually take, not waste this time, the last year and a half, and really shift your culture, you need to contact these guys. Like, contact Shannon Hughes, contact Gary Ware, like, reach out to these guys, because they can help you practically, if, like, with your ethos and culture, not just as a one-off, but like a long-term value shift for your business and organization, to prioritize play, which is going to attract folks who are creative, who are going to help you recalibrate your business, brand, whatever you're looking to do.
Agreed. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for
having us. Do you have a sound effect for us, Gary?
I do. This meeting has been, or this podcast episode has been a...
Yes.
Yeah, a win. It's been a win.
Yes.
All right.
Come on. That is so great. You guys are the best. Thank you so much.
If you want to connect or give feedback to either of us, my feedback, or a way to give feedback to me, is Brad, B-R-A-D, at Heart Connection, HEARTCONNEXION.org. And
you can find me at Rachel at, it's R-A-C-H-E-L, at mosaic-collaborative.com, or Rachel Keck on LinkedIn, or Rachel Laser Keck on Facebook too.
Yeah, for both of us, I mean, you look us up on Facebook, LinkedIn, various social media outlets, and more than likely we'll accept you. So, yes. All right, thank you.
Thank you.